Scripture reading this morning is from Mark 12, verses 38 to 44. As he taught, he said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the best seats in synagogues and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They will receive the great condemnation." He sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums, as you see on the green card in front of me. A poor widow came and put in two small copper cones, also shown on the card in front of me. Which are worth a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." This ends the reading.
It's frequently, when this passage is read, it's frequently treated as an example. Like, see, you should give down to your last two pennies to the work of the church. That is not our closing stewardship message today. What we have here instead is Jesus, the reformer, witnessing the need for reformation in the temple. So he's there, and this poor widow comes up, and she puts her two coins in. He doesn't comment on her doing what is right or wrong. What he is commenting on is how the scribes, the priests, the clergy are exercising the need to be seen. The way the temple was set up, there was a long metal, like bell-shaped tube that people could put their money in. So as they put their money in, it would jangle as it went down. Like a celebration, right? Jingle bells, I'm giving money to the church, everybody, look. And then this poor widow comes up with her two little coins, and all you hear is clink, clink. It's a skewed vision of the loving message that Jesus brings to the world. This reformation that Jesus is calling for and still calls for today. I'm talking about reformation because on October 31st in, I knew you were going to ask the year, 500 something, Martin Luther protested against the church of his day. This would have been the Catholic Church. There were no Protestants then. No Methodists even. One of the main things that he was protesting against, Protestant, that's where it comes from, was the sale of indulgences. Are you familiar with this? You remember your freshman world history? So the Pope Leo, was looking for ways to finance the restoration of St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And he came up with, it's brilliant. It's not right, but it's brilliant. The brilliant idea of, you know, Adela, remember that time when you were a little girl and you took a little extra candy from that store that you shouldn't have? That's probably going to cost you, I don't know, 10 years in purgatory. But if you give me $50, I can cut that down to five. And that's how indulgences worked. And that's how the Pope was financing the restoration of this chapel. And Luther was dead set against it. Luther was the oldest of, actually, I don't recall how many, but five or so. He was the oldest, and his father had big plans for him. He wanted him to go into law. So he had the best education, and when he finished all his preliminary schooling. He applied to law school and he went and pretty much immediately withdrew because he felt that the law, studying the law, was too imprecise. Because, you know, you go into a law court and law can be interpreted, right? It was imprecise. Luther wanted clear lines. So he thought, well, let me switch to philosophy. So he did that, but he didn't really care for that either, because the only precision that he saw, not precision, the only thing that he saw that was clear and that they relied on 100% was reason. It's all about reason in philosophy. And he was like, what about God? It should be about God. So, of course, where does it go? Theology. One day, he was he had a really rough time. He didn't like any of his studies. Luther is kind of, I'm not going to say he's a comedian, but he had a very strong sense of humor, and he had very strong opinions, and he would express those opinions very vividly. He referred to one of his courses of study. I don't remember, I don't think it was theology, but one of his courses of study he referred to as a bunch of like drunks and whoremongers. So he's had this very strong ideas of how things should be and how things, and a strong sense of what was wrong in the world and needing to speak up to in himself as well. One day he was coming home from somewhere and it was a thunderstorm and a lightning bolt went down right near, it didn't hit him, but right near him, and he thought, he took it as a sign, oh, I'm in trouble. I'm gonna have to turn my life around. So he decided, I'm gonna join a monastery and become a monk. And that's what he did. And he hated it. He had a very rough time with the spiritual disciplines, right? You know, the long hours of prayer and waking up early and going on pilgrimages and fasting. And he had a very transactional mindset, right? You've heard me talk about transactional versus transformational a lot. He thought you had to do this, 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 and this to get this. So he didn't like that either, but he was, you know, he stuck. He made this commitment. So now he's a monk and a priest, and he's starting to see things in the world that are corrupt and not right, and he decides that he has to make his statement. So he writes up, in Latin, 95 theses. These are the things that he saw wrong in the church, and he took his list, and he nailed it to the wall, to the door of Wittenberg Cathedral. That's where he lived, and he nailed it there. Now, normally, you know, somebody would come and see it and just rip it down and throw it away. But around the time that Luther was doing this, the printing press was invented. So suddenly, this little treatise of Luther's is able to get spread about and people start to read it and translate it into German. And this big challenge to the church spurs a whole movement. Luther is summarily excommunicated. And the Holy Roman Empire declares him an outlaw. But he continues his work. This new movement starts. It you know, I don't want to say it bursts into flame, but it spreads. It spreads. And that's where our own Protestant tradition comes from. The Church of England, John Wesley and the Methodists. Remember John Wesley? all of these Protestant movements have their birth in the work of Martin Luther. But this Reformation doesn't just stop. It didn't just stop there, because whenever we start something, no matter how well what great intentions we start it with, you know, the temple where Jesus was watching all this going on was originally established in what we now call the Old Testament as a place, you know, established on laws so that people could follow those laws in an effort to walk aligned with God, to be in God's presence, to be holy, and to do what is right in the world. But we humans, as we tend to do, always kind of want to look for the angle of, well, how can I make this work for me? And that's what happens. And it always happens, and it happens again and again. Reform movements come up and change starts again, and then they get a little bit corrupted. Our own, corrupted is a strong word. Sometimes it's true, but I'm about to tell you about us. You know, we're not corrupted. The United Methodist Church, do you know what's going on in the United Methodist Church right now? Are you aware that the bishops met all last week? The bishops of your? I wasn't really aware of that until Friday when I was getting a little anxious about not getting a response from our bishop to a request that I had sent her. And then I found out that she's been in meetings with all these other bishops for the past week. And one of the things that they have been charged with, there's a group that has sent them a petition of grace. Are you aware that this building does not belong to this congregation?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. All the churches belong to the annual conference. So there are provision, and that's called the trust clause. That's been part of the Methodist movement since Wesley started. And so that's been a big area of contention coming up, right? Because at the last general conference, when they voted on the traditional plan, and you know that was going to be that we would stick to the discipline, as it says, there would be no... Do you remember what I'm talking about? No deviation, right? This traditionalist plan, there were a bunch of plans. They were trying to figure out a way for us all to live together under the banner of Methodism. Traditionalists, progressives, and everybody else in between. The traditionalists came up with a plan that said, here's the plan, we have the book, you stick to the book. There's no space, no space for any grace there. And then COVID hit. And suddenly, we're not able to meet as a general conference anymore because of COVID restrictions. It's been postponed twice. The next scheduled one is in August of 2022. And we're not even sure that's going to happen. So that's left a lot of legislative stuff up in the air, which means that there are a lot of people who are stuck in flux, stuck places that are not good for them for whatever reason, traditionalists as well as progressives. So other groups have gotten together and formed plans on, like, how can we do this? And one of them is called the Protocol for Graceful Exit. And this would include allowing congregations who were no longer comfortable within the United Methodist Church to leave and take their property with them. It also provides a $28 million for the establishment of this of a new denomination. That's what this group came up with. Mediated. Progressive and conservative people in this group, mediated by an outside source. When I first heard that, I was like, no way. Why should we give them money to go start a new church? Why should we let them take their property with them? Here's the rules. These are the rules that you want, right? But the more I think about it and the more I see what's the pain that's being caused by having to stay in a organization that is not supportive, that doesn't express the love that Jesus taught us, maybe it's best if we allow, it's up to me, if they allow these churches to leave and take their property with them so that they can do ministry instead of worry about this legislative stuff. I don't know what's going to happen. This was a petition that was sent to the bishops. I think there were only 250 signatures. But the bishops do have it. It's within their purview. There are a couple paragraphs in the Book of Discipline that would allow them to do that. So it's something to think about, and just think about that how we need to constantly refocus rules and operating in a graceful, loving way. You remember back in August, I think I told you, I baptized a young boy at St. John's in Rona Park. My initial thought was, no, sorry, can't do it, because he lived in Michigan. We baptize people into a community. When you baptize somebody, you're accepting them into the community, and you're going to be a part of their lives and care for them and just play a part in their spiritual growth. If this little boy lives in Michigan, how are we supposed to do that from St. John's in Rona Park? So that was my initial thinking, until his mother pointed out to me, but we're a connectional church. We're all connected as United Methodists. So you baptize him into this larger community, which I thought was so beautiful, and changed my mind. I was reformed. Reformation is not only communal, but is also individual. So I want to invite you this week, this year, especially now as we're coming to the end of one liturgical year, and you know, Advent starts the new liturgical year, as we close out this one, to look back at the old. What are those things that we are clinging to so tightly that are not allowing us to love those around us? I'm not going to tell you what those things are. They're different for all of us. I told you one of the things for me, two of the things for me, the trust clause. I was holding on to the trust clause pretty tightly. But I invite you to think about those things, because we're not called here to maintain tight, rigid rules. We're called to love. Amen?